Welcome back to the Hidden Staircase podcast, where we uncover the hidden stories that history has forgotten. I'm Kristen Seavey, your host for this journey, and I'm thrilled that you have joined me. Today, we will explore an intriguing tale about Easter 1937. So sit back, relax, and prepare to be transported through time as we uncover a hidden story about this beloved holiday. Easter is a celebration of spring associated with renewal and birth. It's been a special day for thousands of years. Tracing back to its ancient pagan origins, called Yauster. Celebrating this occasion is an inherent trait of humanity, bringing happiness to most of us. However, for some, it may be a period of unrest, and sometimes even violence. A tragic example is Robert George Irwin, who took the day as an opportunity to claim the lives of three innocent people in 1937. As a boy, Robert Irwin learned to sculpt at a trade school after his father abandoned the family and fled to Canada. He was considered brilliant, but his behavior was erratic and sometimes violent. Robert struggled with his mental health throughout his life and spent some time in multiple state-run mental hospitals after he attempted to castrate himself with a razor. Robert's health improved remarkably after a year-long stay at a hospital in California. With renewed hope and energy, he decided to make a fresh start in New York City. Mary Gedeon, the proprietor of a boarding house, welcomed him as a tenant and offered him a room in her home. Robert soon developed a strong and intense passion for Mary's daughter, Ethel. He was completely enamored by her charm, wit, and beauty. However, despite his feelings for her, Ethel did not reciprocate his love. He was head over heels with Ethel, but she didn't feel the same way. This, combined with the stress of living in the city, caused his mental health to decline. He spent 2 years in treatment at Rockland State Hospital until the summer of 1936. During his time there, he dreamed of a future with Ethel, hoping that one day she would be interested in him. When he left the hospital and returned to the Gedeon boarding house, he was excited to see Ethel again. Unfortunately, he learned that she had married Joseph Kudner and was uninterested in him. He realized she had been clear about this from the beginning, and there was nothing he could do to change her mind. Robert tried to move on by enrolling in the theological school of St. Lawrence University. However, he couldn't stop thinking about Ethel, and his mental state continued to deteriorate. He was expelled from the university on March 18, 1937, due to unstable behavior. His love for Ethel had turned into an obsession, and eventually anger. Robert decided to rent a room at a boarding house a few blocks away from Mary's and began to spiral down a dark hole. As his mind raced, he decided to jump into the East River and end everything, but eventually rejected the idea as he turned his sights back onto Ethel. Robert was in a state of despair and hopelessness. However, he mustered up the strength to take a walk and soon found himself standing in front of the Gedeon home. The house was quiet and peaceful, and he walked right inside, moving silently through the darkened house. The following day, Easter Sunday, the relatives arrived at the house for dinner. They were shocked by the eerie silence and surprised to find no evidence of food or anyone being there. As they began to look around, they discovered a gruesome scene. Ethel's younger sister, Veronica, was found naked and strangled to death on her bed. Her mother, Mary, was found in the same state under the bed with evidence of sexual assault. Down the hall in a room he'd been renting, a deaf boarder named Frank Burns was also found with multiple stab wounds. Along with the bodies, there was also a tiny sculpture carved out of soap. During the investigation, an upstairs neighbor reported that he had noticed that the Gedeon's door was open at 2 a.m., and he closed it. He also said that he'd seen Veronica return home from a date an hour earlier, and she seemed to be intoxicated. Investigators believed that someone had entered the home and waited for Veronica to return as they murdered Frank and her mother, and then hid her mother's body under the bed. Initially, police suspected a driver, and then Mary Gedeon's ex-husband, Joseph. But later, their attention shifted to Robert because of the soap sculpture found at the scene. Soon, the hunt for Robert Irwin was underway, led by State Inspector John Lyons, who said, "It makes no difference whether he committed 300 murders, so far as the state is concerned. His psychopathic background shows he's insane." Even after the gruesome murders of her sister and mother, Ethel Gedeon, as well as Robert's psychiatrist, had doubts that he could even be capable of doing something so horrible. Nevertheless, Robert fled town and further cemented the state's belief that he was the killer. Towards the end of 1937, a pantry maid at Cleveland Statler Hotel stumbled on a picture of Robert Irwin in a pulp magazine. The maid couldn't help but notice that Bob Murray, a bar boy who had been working at the hotel for only 2 months, bore a striking resemblance to Robert Irwin. Intrigued, the maid asked Murray about his last name and whether he knew anything about Robert Irwin. However, as soon as Murray was questioned, he promptly emptied his locker and vanished. In the upcoming days, an individual calling themselves Robert Irwin contacted the Chicago Tribune and offered to surrender himself in exchange for a fee. Unfortunately, the Tribune considered this call a prank and ignored it. However, the Chicago Herald Examiner also received a similar call, and they took it seriously. They agreed to pay Irwin $5,000 for an exclusive story before he surrendered. In his confession, Robert said that he initially intended to kill Ethel because, quote, "she was the dearest object in the world to him." But because she wasn't home, he went on to state that he accidentally killed the others instead. He went on to state that he went to the Gedeons' flat, expecting to find Ethel. He first struck and then strangled Mary Gedeon after she asked him to leave. After Veronica arrived, he terrorized her but strangled her only after she called him by name, which showed that she recognized him. Afterward, afraid to leave a witness and unaware that he was deaf, Irwin entered Frank Burns' room and stabbed him to death in his bed. In his confession to New York detectives, Robert compared himself to a radio by explaining, "Bob Irwin is nothing. I'm only a receiving set, an extremely imperfect one which can indistinctly tune into the divine mind. You've heard a radio that isn't working well. You turn the dials and get a squawking. Only once in a while can we get the pure, clear music. My whole idea in life was to perfect myself so the receiving set could always get divine music at its best." A few hours later, Robert was indicted for 3 counts of first-degree murder, and despite his past stays in mental hospitals, New York found him sane at the time of the murders and claimed that he knew the nature and quality of his acts. Robert Irwin pleaded guilty to 3 counts of second-degree murder in exchange for avoiding the death penalty and a promise that a pair of trousers that he had abandoned in a suitcase left at Grand Central Station would be returned to him. Judge James Wallace sentenced him to 139 years to life in prison for the 3 murders, and Robert was sent to the infamous Sing Sing prison, where he received a thorough psychological evaluation. After conducting the necessary tests, the medical professionals concluded that he was suffering from severe mental illness. They used the words, "very definitely insane," to describe his condition. As a result, he was immediately transferred to Dannemora State Hospital on December 10, 1938, where he received treatment and care for his mental health. Robert spent the next 37 years in state-run hospitals until he died in 1975 from cancer. The troubled artist who had once carved commercial busts of President Franklin D. Roosevelt had succumbed to his mental illness and claimed the lives of three people, all because his love for Ethel wasn't returned. Thank you for joining me in learning how Easter isn't always a time for celebration. I'm Kristen Seavey. Join me next time for another tale on the Hidden Staircase podcast.